Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your Yarn Encircled the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, you know, at BBM Bummerbrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service, and you can have your say by calling us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across the deadly country of ours, welcome back to National Talk Black. Going to jump straight in. We've got our man on the line from New Matilda, Chris Gray. I'm on the line. A very good morning, my brother. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good. Thank you, Trendy Trev. Very good.
Fantastic. Where are you at the moment? Where are you based?
Oh, I'm sitting in Broken Hill.
Yes.
But I've been mostly based in Wilcannia.
Yes. So with COVID-19, have you been travelling or isolation?
I've been travelling between Broken Hill and Wilcannia. Oh, and I also had to sort of do the whole of New South Wales. So, yes, I have been travelling. I've been up to...
Walkabout.
I did 2,600 kilometres in 3 days or something. I went up to Bourke and then Bree and Ganya, Wilmeringle, Collie, Lightning Ridge, Walgett, down to Canamble, then all the way down to Dearden and Wentworth. And so I did virtually a circle of the whole far west of the state.
And what's the makeup of the work that you're doing? What's the nucleus?
Well, that trip was... delivering signs, COVID signs, basically. It's been interesting being in New South Wales and watching the New South Wales government response to the COVID because, you've seen in Queensland where Doggett community has been essentially reverse barrier lockdown, and that's happened in the Territory and SA and WA. But in New South Wales, the New South Wales government's taken the approach that Aboriginal people are just like everybody else, and so they'll the government will respond just like everybody else, which is, of course, ridiculous because communities like Wilcannia, they're 66% Aboriginal population. They're overcrowded like most Aboriginal communities. Yep. The health outcomes there are very, very poor. So they're much more like an aged care centre than they are a normal town in terms of their vulnerability to COVID. So obviously the response is supposed to be completely different, but in New South Wales, the New South Wales government just dug their heels in and said, no, we're just going to manage it the way we've managed everywhere else. So my job, I've been working for an Aboriginal health organisation called Murrumah, which I've been working on off for years, and essentially it was to get in and try and get as much action on COVID as we possibly could. And that kind of expanded to the whole far west of the whole Murdi Parkey region, which is basically a huge area of kind of the left-hand side of New South Wales, I suppose, Australia. And those communities, they're all essentially in the same position. They're all vulnerable. They're all very anxious about COVID getting into an Aboriginal community because if it does, the result will be... It'll be like Newmarch House in Sydney. There will be a substantial number of deaths and a substantial number of people, and not necessarily older people, who are made very, very sick by it. So my job's been kind of running around trying to get government motivated to do various things. And that trip basically posting signs on the outskirts of towns asking travellers, and people might think there aren't tourists on the road, there still are, believe it or not, but asking them not to stop in Aboriginal communities, which is hugely ironic because a town like Wilcannia, there's been a rumour travelling around the grey nomad circuit for decades that Wilcannia is too dangerous to stop. And it's actually marked on some people's maps, do not stop in Wilcannia because it's too dangerous.
Oh, wow.
Is, of course, ludicrous. Yeah,
yes. I mean, hello, 21st century.
Down here. Yeah, look, I've been in and out of Wilcannia for 20 years. I've never had a millisecond of trouble. It's one of the nicest, loveliest people. It's a wonderful community. But, you know, I mean, you know how Australian myths and legends go. So we ended up a few months ago getting the kids to make some signs which asked the tourists not to stop in Wilcannia because they're too dangerous. Which caused a bit of a stir. But
well, then they keep the township to themselves, so that's a good thing as well.
Well, they do, yeah. They essentially, I'll tell you what, when the COVID crisis first broke, Wilcannia's a population of about 750. It's got a couple of service stations and one shop, and it's right on the Darling River, so normally it's buggered, you know. There's no water coming down the Darling. They're just, they've utterly ruined that river.
But and you're saying people were driving through at the beginning of COVID-19 and picking up all the toilet paper and leaving. I remember that conversation.
I spoke to you about that right at the beginning. It looked like Pitt Street, but it's quietened down since. But in New South Wales, they're just about to lift the restrictions. So as of next week, they're encouraging people to flood back out into the regions and give, you know, tourism a boost in the regions. Which there's a lot of sympathy for that out here because a lot of the economy relies on tourism, but the Aboriginal communities out here are saying, hang on a minute, we don't want our communities flooded with tourists until there's a vaccine for COVID until they can guarantee that they've eliminated COVID.
Vulnerable people.
Yeah, I mean, it takes one traveller to pass COVID onto someone at a service station, and then that person at the service station passes it on to one of the local blackfellas. And when you live in cramped, overcrowded conditions, the effect of a virus like COVID is vastly different to what you might see in Sydney or one of the major centres. So
exactly.
The response out here to the New South Wales government opening up the roads hasn't been well received at all. There's quite a bit of anger about it. There was zero consultation with Aboriginal communities about...
Well, the Aboriginal community has turned into a stationary Ruby Princess, so to speak, is the description I've been putting out there.
Yeah, the point we've been trying to make is that the Australian government, the New South Wales government, and all the state and territory governments, when they responded to the COVID crisis, they responded very quickly to lockdown aged care centres, as well they should, because elderly Australians are most at risk from the virus.
Yep.
But in New South Wales, they've done absolutely nothing, really, to prevent or to prepare for what might happen if COVID hits an Aboriginal community, and it will decimate the community. So we've been arguing they should be treating remote Aboriginal communities with the same care and concern that they've been treating aged care centres, but they're not. They're just fundamentally... I actually don't think it's out of stubbornness or race or, you know, the age-old problem of racism. I think it's just they're looking at it and going, well, we've got a huge problem. We're doing as much as we can, but there's only so much we can do. And sorry, mob.
Put in the intro.
put in the intro. So that's been my job for 10 or 12 weeks now. I haven't been home to Queensland since late February. But we're still going. I mean, I think people down here, at least, I don't know what it's like up there, but people down here, a lot of people think the crisis is over. It's absolutely not.
Well, if there's no vaccine, it's not over.
Yeah, that's right. And look, if it just takes one person to bring it into an Aboriginal community, and the impact will be it's impossible to even imagine. The effect of COVID on a community like Wilcannia would be utterly horrendous. And if you can imagine an Aboriginal community with, you know, a quarter or half its elders wiped out, what's the future of that community? You know, the elders are such a key part of communities like Wilcannia that a community like that would never really recover from that. So my job is basically to try and get the government to take that seriously, and I've had very mixed results.
So you're communicating with the mayor and with the elders in the community, of course?
Yeah, we are. Look, I tell you, the local council, the Shire Council, has been excellent. And there's a simple reason for that, and that is because the actual council got sacked a few years ago for blinding incompetence and corruption. Yeah. And it's now been in administration for quite some years and looks like staying in administration.
All administrators always dot their I's, cross the T's, so it's a good thing, really.
Well, look, and it just so happened that the Central Darling Shire got a new general manager, and they got a new administrator, and both those people have taken it very, very seriously. Mm. The administrator actually has a background in emergency management, so he understood it straight away.
Yep.
I've got to say, the local government around Wilcannia has been beyond excellent. They've been absolutely outstanding. But tiers of government above them have been utterly, utterly underwhelming. And I mean, you know, the good news is there hasn't been a COVID case in Wilcannia.
And that's the goal. That's the goal.
Well, yeah, that is the goal. But our argument all along has been you should be preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. And they haven't been doing that. They've just been hoping for the best. They haven't been preparing for anything.
Mm. And now when you look at COVID-19 and you look at the so-called correctional centres as well, that's been a scary thing as well for prisons, especially with First Nation incarceration, which is high. That is a sitting place for COVID-19.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they're sitting ducks, basically. Just like Aboriginal communities, they're kind of captive. And, they are captive, quite literally.
Yeah.
There's been some really awesome things come out of it. I mean, in Wilcannia, there's a woman called Monica Wyman who is the chair of a working party, which is kind of there's 16 communities in the Nerdy Parky region. They each have a working party and they each have a chair. Monica, when this all blew up, she's Wilcannia born and bred, in her 50s, a really, you know, strong Aboriginal woman. She started a Meals on Wheels program to start feeding elders and not black and white. They do 55 meals each day, 3 days a week, and they deliver them all around town to the elders. It's extraordinary.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but what's
her name? Mention her name again, please, brother.
Monica Wyman or Monica Kerwin.
And big shout out to Monica Kerwin. Thank you, sister. Yep.
Yeah. Look, she's an extraordinary woman, but has hit so much opposition from some of the local white fellas in town because. Wilcannia, like a lot of particularly New South Wales towns, there's a clique of white people in the town who have always hated the mob and will do whatever they can to frustrate the efforts of the mob. But Monica's pushed on anyway, and she's been running it now for 10 weeks. She's only missed one day, and that was in order to call a community meeting to try and address some of the problems that a few white people in town were trying to create to try and end the Meals on Wheels service. Their argument was, we have a local shop, people should be shopping at the shop. In fact,
but she was only feeding the elders, was she not?
Yep.
Well, there you go. Hello.
Black and white.
Yes.
And one of the people actually wrote a letter to the council, which subsequently found its way into the public domain, unfortunately.
There you go.
which said, why can't the Aboriginals feed themselves? We're in the middle of a global pandemic.
Wow.
There is massive food security issues in Wilcannia.
We're feeding the elders and more recent arrivals. Understand that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's been incredibly ugly to watch, but it's been much more awesome to watch the Aboriginal response to it.
And, stepping up.
Yeah, look, there's two different factions, if you like, in Wilcannia. There's the mob aligned to the Land Council and there's the mob aligned to the Working Party. But right at the start of the COVID outbreak, those two groups started working together and they're still working together. So, you know, where you've seen communities divided and split historically, COVID's actually brought communities like Wilcannia together and they've kind of put their differences aside.
Well, the affirmation that runs around the country is we are all in this together.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm actually out there filming a video next Monday to a song. I'll send. Oh, actually, you guys might be in it, I think.
There you go.
A song called In This Together, released by Nancy Bates, who's a Barkindji woman. So she's releasing a song for Reconciliation Week called In This Together.
Beautiful.
And you guys are in it, I think.
Yeah, thank you.
Video yet?
I do, yeah. Did a little skit yesterday, yeah, brother.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
455 takes, you know what I'm saying? Right here, man.
Yeah, that's great.
Fantastic. Now, listen, we're talking about COVID-19 and the world, the world that we're living in at the moment. We always have problems in this country regarding black deaths in custody, and there's been some awful stuff going on in America with George Floyd, a recent brother who just passed because of an arrest by an officer. It raises its ugly head again, and it keeps it alive regarding our fight regarding deaths in custody. Any comment on that, brother?
Yeah, look, Yeah, I saw that breaking on the news, and it's the same old, isn't it? I mean, this happens frequently, and there doesn't seem to be any change. It just keeps happening. Eric Garner was one of the ones before.
Yes.
I just don't know what's hard to work out about this. If you hold someone down and compress them and they yell they can't breathe, well, they probably can't breathe. So you probably should stop.
And it wasn't resisting.
No.
And we were handcuffed.
I mean, it's pretty appalling. I just don't know. I don't know what the solution to it is, other than the people who do this have to be held to account. But the police unions, I mean, in Australia, it's the same. The police unions are strong and they fight tooth and nail and pressure governments not to take action against people who've essentially committed, at the very least, a manslaughter.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I actually, that story broke when I was in Wilcannia, and it reminded me of the story of an Aboriginal man who was in Wilcannia. He grew up and lived in Wilcannia. He was one of the 99 deaths investigated in the Royal Commission to Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. And he had presented to the local hospital, which is kind of infamous for its racism. And the hospital, they used bureaucratic speak to suggest they didn't think they could keep him safe. So they called the coppers and had him moved to a police cell for his own safety. The next morning, of course, the man's dead. His name was Mark Anthony Quayle, and he was one of the 99 deaths investigated in the Royal Commission. Australia, I think, undeniably has improved, I suppose you could say, on the death in custody front. But when I use the term loosely, because they were coming off a very, very low base, and it shouldn't be happening at all.
Exactly.
But it still does. And I do understand. The one thing I've seen, working out in the bush, is police out there, they have a hard job. There's no question about that.
Sure.
They have one of probably the toughest job in town. But it doesn't give them license to do what they do. No, it doesn't. And, I've got to say, the main copper out at Wilcannia, Tony Moody, I've watched him closely for 12 weeks, and he does strike me as someone who really is trying to police in a more respectful and
beautiful,
culturally appropriate way, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
But the history that they've got to overcome, both distant and very recent, is pretty extreme. And that US death in custody, I just, what do you do? I mean, it probably reminds people of the Palm Island Mulwindji Dilmaji, and they flog a man to death on the floor of the police station, and then end up giving the copper who did it $100,000 and a promotion and a taxpayer-funded holiday.
And then oil rose to the top. Yeah, eventually, what happened? Yeah. He did it again, virtually. With a fellow copper?
Grabbed a female police.
Yes.
Yeah, he grabbed a female police officer by the arm, and that's what got him sacked. It didn't get him sacked beating a black man to death on the floor of the Palm Island Watch House.
No.
But grabbing a female copper,
a white one at that,
duty. Yeah, white one, got him punted. I mean, which speaks volumes about the police service and the police union and the priority of the Queensland government in bringing police to heel who shouldn't be on the force. And, I know a lot of decent police who try very hard and, they are good people in doing a difficult job.
Hear, hear.
But undeniably, there is a significant percentage of the police service that probably shouldn't be there.
Mm.
No one wants to confront that.
No. But we're talking about it, and we'll not stop talking about it, and that's what it's all about, is putting it out there, and we're using tools like so to deliver that message.
The obvious future, though, I've got to say, because Wilcannia's reminded me of this, the obvious future is the communities like Wilcannia or, any First Nations community around the country, that the obvious solution is for them to police their own communities.
Yeah.
But that still does happen to some degree in some communities where traditional law is still in place, but it's fundamentally about governments realising that in 99% of the cases, the government is the problem, and they just need to hand over the funding and let the communities sort things out themselves. I mean, the communities, by and large, didn't create these problems, but they're the only ones who can fix them.
Sure.
So governments need to loosen the reins and just hand over control to senior leaders in these communities and step back and cross their fingers that it all goes well. And it won't all go well all the time, but I'll tell you what, it'll be better than some of the rubbish policies.
Yeah, but you get the good effects that come off from that, employment, togetherness, ownership, responsibility and self-responsibility, all the above.
I've written countless features on this over the last 20 years, and I did one probably 7 or 8 years ago that looked at a study which explored self-determination in Canada, United States, New Zealand and Australia. And those three other countries, Canada, United States, New Zealand, they're not perfect. They haven't worked it out, but they've done a lot more towards genuine self-determination for Indigenous populations than Australia has. And if you look at their statistics, they are undeniably streets ahead of Australia in all sorts of areas, in terms of life expectancy, jailing rates, employment, education and literacy. They're miles ahead. Because in those countries, the notion of self-determination is not a dirty word. It's only in Australia that you see people arc up and say, no, we're one nation, we should be one nation. They're just like us. You know, everybody should be treated the same. Well, First Nations people in Australia aren't treated the same. They never have.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's fundamentally about self-determination. It is the only thing that has worked anywhere on earth, and that is so well proven and so well documented, it's ridiculous. But Australia, you know, we're backward and we just don't get it.
We're backward. There we are, the big island.
Yeah. It's undeniable. I mean, the evidence and the statistics on it are absolutely undeniable. We've got some of the worst life statistics on earth, but we're one of the richest nations on earth. It's undeniable, but Australia, you know, we just...
And the numbers don't lie.
No, they don't, and they're not numbers Aboriginal people made up, they're numbers that government supplies. So, if you don't want to believe the mob, well, maybe you should believe the government, because it's their figures.
Yeah, beautiful. Hey, always great catching up with you, my brother. You travel safe. There's what you're doing, back and forth to the little townships, but doing a fantastic job, and big shout-out to all the Daily Mob there. Wilconia, my brother.
Thank you.
Take care.
Pass it on.
Beautiful. Bye, Chris. Beautiful yarn, Chris Gray from New Matilda. And look, a non-Indigenous brother, white on the outside, black on the inside is how we describe him. He's passionate about our mob and does a lot in regarding delivering the news and the real news, not fake news, from New Matilda. So check it out, newmatilda.com. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the Baldy one, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabit Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can have your say by calling us on that number, 1-800-422-416.
My people, Aboriginal. We are the original people.
Yeah, too deadly, that track. My people, Chris Phillips here on your daily program, National Talk Black. You can have your say by calling us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Yana with the bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service. Have your say, Yana, strong your mob, too deadly. Now, across Australia, children as young as 10 are charged, brought before a court, sentenced and locked up behind bars. And there's been a lot of uproar about this. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Rodney Dillon, Aboriginal advisor with Amnesty International on the line. Brother Rodney, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, brother. Before we start, brother, first of all, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
So I'm Palawa from Tasmania. My great-great-grandmother was Fanny Cochran Smith, and she was the first Aboriginal kid born on the mission on Wybalina on Flinders Island.
Beautiful. Thank you, brother. With us in spirit, thank you very much. Now, you're wearing the hat as the Aboriginal advisor, Amnesty International. Look, we're talking about 10-year-olds charged, brought before court, sentenced and locked up behind bars. Very, very young, my brother.
It's too young. The international standard is 14, and we know the problems that kids have. They can be locked up and put in prison at 10 years of age, and we know it's not right. You know, we never ever had a jail. We didn't even have a word for jail.
So your work with Amnesty International, what do you do there, brother?
So we're working on trying to get all the attorney generals from around the country. They're having a CAG meeting in mid-June, and we want them all together to raise the age to 14. So we've been campaigning in every state about getting the and talking to the Attorney Generals about raising the importance of bringing it up to an international standard.
Look, we do.
The rights of the child,
yes,
is set 14.
Yeah, that's look.
The international standard.
Yeah, I'm hearing you, my brother. We do have crime rates out there, and sad, a lot of the youth of First Nation. But 10-year-old, there's got to be another way of tackling this instead of just putting them behind bars, brother. Too young.
There is. Indigenous-led solutions are the way to go.
Yep.
We can see in Townsville, you've got Red Dust Healing, Randall Ross, you've got other organisations that can take kids and change their behaviour and send them back out into the country without the recidivism. Mm. And we're saying that Indigenous-led solutions are the way to go, not just in Townsville, but all over Australia. There's ones in Fitzroy Crossing. There's others, Bush Mob in Alice. So you've got plenty of options that we could take the kids to, and we do that ourselves when the kids are not taken off our families.
So Indigenous kids in prison. Look, Australia's national disgrace is the headline here. That can you hear me there? Sorry, Rodney. No, Rodney. I'll try and get him back. That's Rodney Dillon there. He's the Aboriginal advisor at Amnesty International. I lost him. I'll try and get him back online and continue the conversation. But Indigenous rights advisor, Amnesty Australia, and his statement is Indigenous kids in prison, Australia's national disgrace. So despite a slight dip in the number of Indigenous children in the youth justice system, according to today's figures from Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, the statistics show Australia continues to fail its First Nations peoples. So that's the conversation I'm having with Rodney Dillon. Crime rate is high across this nation, especially youth crime, and a lot of kids who are out there doing wrong. A lot of them are First Nation kids, and in regard to we've got a problem here, but we've got the answer solution as in black on black and us mob working with our youth. But 10-year-old in jail, not good. There's got to be another format. Look, have you say, Yarn Upstrong, we'll try and get Rodney back, continue the conversation. But the number here is 1-800-422-416. Yeah, Yarn with the Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakari. And I'm live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. I think we've got Rodney back on the line here. I'll try and get him on the line and put him through on the line in desk there. I think I got him here. Rodney, you there? Yeah, sorry,
yeah,
brother. Lost your brother. They're listening to us. They're trying to cut us out, cuss.
Yeah, they're in the middle.
They're in the middle,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Now, your statement here, Indigenous kids in prison, Australia's national disgrace. You stand strong with that, don't you, brother?
Yep. It's a national disgrace. And these prisons are full of Aboriginal kids, you know, and we've got to start changing this. But no kid should be in that prison at 10 years of age.
Black or white. Black or white. No. Any young. No. Yeah, no. Prison's not a place for kids.
No.
Yeah, not at that age.
Families are a place for kids. Families with their mum and dads and their uncles and aunts and grandparents and their community. That's where they should be, not in. And, you know, it's not the prison officers, it's the prison system that's doing this to our families.
Yeah. Now, you're talking about raising the age from 10 to 14, is that right? So in some instances, kids, well, as they get older, should be getting more mature. But at the age of 14, then you should know your actions and your statements. And if you are doing the wrong thing, then detention regarding, thinking about your future. 4 more years, become an adult. So 14 is a good age, is what you're thinking?
Yeah, we think. Well, that's the international standard.
Okay.
That's
for
the Convention of the Rights of the Child, and that's what they recommend. And we're saying that, and still then, we're saying that they should be going to taken to Aboriginal-run programs to address this issue, because we know if you put an Aboriginal kid or any kid in solitary confinement, we know the mental health strain that has on children, and we know that's not a place for any kids to be.
Exactly. Well, when you're talking about, say, international standard, would 10 years old would be against the law, would it not?
It's not recommended, no. It's... like I say, that standard, there's no particular standard, but that's the standard there is. 14 is should be the international age, and we're not up to that.
All right, so watch this space. So you're waiting for the meeting with the attorneys, generals, to have their meeting?
All the attorney generals are having a meeting in mid-June, and we're hoping that their recommendation will be that they raise the age.
Okay.
All around the country.
Sure,
not
right.
Just in one state.
Yep.
All the attorney generals meet and they come up with that, bringing it up to 14. It's an important step for this country to take as a country.
And a meeting that's going to be watched very closely.
We know that kids that are locked up at 10 years old are a lot more times likely to reoffend.
Yeah.
And we know when, and families know when kids come out of the prison system, they're more angry. And they're more likely to reoffend, and we know that's not a place to put our kids.
Yep, exactly. All right, we'll be watching it very carefully as well, my friend. Look, please do keep in touch. Thank you for sharing. All the best to you, Rodney, to you and your team there, and your family. Stay safe, Cuss.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, if people want to have a look, go to Amnesty's website on our CIE and talk to us about raising the age.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. All the best, Rodney.
Thank you. Bye.
See you, bro. Deadly Young there, Rodney Dillon, his name is, Aboriginal Advisor for Amnesty International, and is talking about raising the age from 10 to 14 for kids to be in jail. So there you have your say, Jan Armstrong here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
G'day folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son.
Yes, a very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Love to hear from your mob too, Daily. We're going to catch up with Daily Brother now. He's the chairperson of Supply Oz, Sean Andrews, who I'm going to talk to. He's on the line. A very good morning, Brother Sean. How are you?
I'm really well, Chad, brother. How you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. First of all, Cuss, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
Yeah, so my dad's side of the family, Manjali, and mum's a Palawa. I'm really lucky. I live in down in Naarm now, which the white fellas call Melbourne, in sunny Victoria.
Sunny Victoria, yeah, good go, brother. Bet you're freezing down that way.
Just think warm thoughts, yeah?
Warm thoughts, that's right, yeah. Like when we have rain up this way in far north Queensland in Cairns, we call it liquid sunshine. It's all good, brother. Hey, my brother, look, beautiful to have you on the line. Look, Supply Oz, Tell the mob out there, the deadly listeners, what Supply Oz is, how it came about. You're the chairperson. Please enlighten us, brother.
Yeah, so the business is 100% Indigenous-owned organisation. There's four Indigenous owners, and it started about 18 months ago when the four of us were sitting around after completing an Indigenous business course at Melbourne Uni, having a yarn about problems with suicides that had happened in a couple of our communities and how money wasn't getting down to the people on the ground who were doing the work. Because there's a lot of real deadly mob out there who do fantastic things on the ground with our kids, and they're the best ones that are taking care of our kids, and we were really just a bit upset about it. So we thought, well, we're all business owners. We've been battling away. Why don't we come together and form a business and get into supplying companies with what they need? And, you know, the first thing that came to mind for us was that, well, we're Indigenous peoples. Mm. We're really... Indigenous people are incredible, adaptive, fluid-thinking people.
Yep.
And we're solution finders and always have been. So we didn't want to limit ourselves to a particular type of company. We thought, let's get into procurement and become specialists at that and just supply businesses with things that they need and be really proactive on that. So we sat down there and we went, oh, what are we going to name it? And I thought, oh, well, we can't, unfortunately, we can't go out there and name it one of the names of any of our languages or anything like that because it just won't take off. So we sat down and thought of what's some of the most whitest names we could come up, most acceptable.
Shut up. Whitest name. So, and it's sad that you've got to say that, but you want to draw people to the site or to the business and not push away. But, you know, like the world we live in, I don't know, redneck, you know, oil rises to the top, all the above, you know. It's out there, brother, you know.
Absolutely it is. And you've got to really look at it. Like my grandmother always used to say that you can attract a kangaroo better with a carrot than you can with a stick.
Mm.
So, you know, we want to make sure we bring people in to work with us, and they'll know we're Indigenous business once they see what the business is and what we do and how we act. And
sure.
Our management team's all Indigenous, and our logos and combines all where we're from and all that sort of stuff.
Well, you're virtually just opening up the door, aren't you, Sean, regarding come to the table. Here's the name, Supply Oz. Come to the table, converse with us, and then we will expose or share with you what their business is, what we're doing, and if you're all for it, then step into it. If not, that's fine too. But come to the table and have a listen,
right.
have a yarn anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, we're all successful business people in our own rights, and, you know, my other company's Indigicate, and I've spent 8 years in that, and I know that you've got to open up an area where people will come in and not... It's a nice, easy area to do business, and we've seen it fail time and time again, because it's too hard for non-Indigenous people to get their heads around Indigenous names or stuff like that. So
they're probably thinking it's a government-run business as well, you know?
That's right.
That's my taxpayers' money. What do I want to go and talk to help them mob for?
That's right. So we did that, and we knew also that the people who are buying from us aren't, they're not generally Indigenous businesses either. So we went down that path, and we started up, and we got into procurement, and for 12 months, we battled away with getting products designed and working out where we're going to fit into different markets. And then COVID hit, and we were... Mm. It's a real bizarre story in a lot of ways, but just shows, I suppose, the genius of Indigenous peoples, because we were getting some hand sanitizer and other products branded up and ready to ship over to Australia.
Mm.
And COVID hit, and then all of a sudden, no one really cared about the branding anymore. They needed the product.
Exactly.
And that's when Woolies reached out, and my mum works at Woolies, so I've always been a big fan of Woolies, and
sure.
They reached out needing hand sanitizer for people like my mum who work at the checkout and to take care of them.
Mm.
And we had this conversation with them about what it looks like, and they said, oh, we need, you know, 200,000 units, which is a lot, 100 tons
mm.
of hand sanitizer. And then we had to work out how to get it here, and we managed to fly an entire plane load of hand sanitizer over right at the start of COVID.
Represent,
we had to
brother.
Work with multiple. So for your listeners to understand, we had $5,000 to our names in that business.
Mm.
We were a small Indigenous business, and we flew 100 tons of hand sand over with the help of Woolies, who got in and supported us to fund it, over in the first sort of week of COVID. We had it here fairly quickly, and then it got out. You know, one of my greatest joys is seeing my, got a photo of my 14-month-old daughter using it. Well, she's not really using it, you know, but she's got it there and she's holding it in Woolies with my mum.
Yeah.
And just seeing that and being able to protect them and grow the business that way has been great.
And if you look at it in a business sense, Sean, it's in business. Find the wants and needs for the people. Fulfill that want and need. You've got a business. Sanitizer, there it is, COVID-19.
That's right. And then with the Victorian government's push on working with Indigenous business,
yes,
we had a lot of departments reach out to us and we were able to actually meet a lot of their needs, like right through all the health sections. And everyone who needed it, and that was just unbelievable to be able to do that.
So it's sad to say, but if you look at it, COVID-19 was an angel in disguise regarding your business.
From a business point of view, absolutely. Yeah. What it did is it showed, and I've been really big on saying this, and people, I know the mobs understand this, but a lot of non-Indigenous people don't. We're fluid thinking people.
Mm.
We've survived in this country for such a long time because of our ability to adapt and read situations and move through things. And we were just able to do that at the time. And now what that's enabled us to do, and that Woolworths agreement in particular, has enabled us to grow our business. You know, we've employed several staff who all started this week.
Good.
We're putting in job training programs and apprenticeships along the line for some Indigenous young people. And, you know, I can't believe it. This morning I went and saw a coffee roaster. We're about to introduce Indigenous coffee range and put in native flavours and stuff through coffees. And
yes. Today, Melbourne, tomorrow, the world, brother.
I'll set up in Melbourne now. And
that's right, beautiful.
And do that. Yeah, so it's been really amazing. And I suppose for me personally, as the chair of this company and working in it and seeing what we can achieve, like, is our supply eyes and the Indigenous leadership that's been there and just the support of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people in this time. Brother, I don't know if you've seen it, but our mobs have just gotten so much stronger in this period of time.
Yes.
To come together and supporting each other. I've just been moved by it all. And I just feel really grateful that to be in this situation and be able to run a business and do this because of the strength of all the Aboriginal people, Torres Strait Islander people behind us.
Mm. Well, it's about rising, you know, and that's what you do in the business sense, and creating an opportunity. And look, in more ways than one, we're talking COVID-19, we're talking internet business, we're talking helping mob. I mean, there it is, all in the one card, brother. And Facet is strong in regarding what you're building there, brother. Now, Supply Oz, one word, AUS.com.au. Get our mob to check that out and purchase stuff from you guys and support what you're doing instead of, how you're saying, going to Amazon. Supply Oz, there it is, brother. And this is the black version of Amazon. Watch this space. don't giggle, brother. And when you get at the top there, brother, don't forget I'll mow your lawn, I'll wash your car. Keep me in mind, bro.
you need a loan, bros.
There you go.
I can give you a loan. It's all right. But, you know, it's in all seriousness, I'm pumped about where we're at and what we're doing. And I want the mob to come and work with us and buy from us. And at the same time, we want to buy from mob and support other businesses. And we haven't in time. And we're not going to big note about supporting our own because I know a lot of our people do it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Every time non-Indigenous people spend money with Indigenous business, the impact goes throughout all our communities in a bigger way than non-Indigenous business. So get our mob to buy and get the Migaloo mob to buy as well and just everyone get on board.
Exactly, brother. Now, you're also open for Indigenous business out there to come to the table, put their produce through your business?
Absolutely. We're in discussions at the moment about how we can help people with their products and getting them to market and what that looks like and supporting Indigenous business in a real inclusive way. So rather than saying no to someone, if it's a big task and lots of things to do, trying to help them set themselves up so that they can build their products.
Yes.
And some people have got ready-made products to come and say, maybe even launch at Woolies and stuff like that, which would be amazing. Like, imagine, you know how you've got the Asian section, food section of Woolies?
Mm.
Imagine if the supermarkets had an Indigenous section like
yes.
that.
I love your vision. That's right, exactly.
Yeah. That's something that we'd like to get involved with and help people do. And, and you know, there's, as you'd be aware and the listeners would be aware, there are heaps of Indigenous business out there with great products. They probably don't understand the process of getting in the market, but more than happy to have that conversation.
Good.
And most importantly, more than happy to support them.
And the other thing that comes to mind, brother, we're mocking in regard to the name and don't want to make it too Indigenous in regard to drawing the people in. Hats off to non-Indigenous businesses out there and big corporations who are in support of First Nation peoples in business or just life itself in education, employment, whatever. They're at the table and supporting you anyway, you know what I mean? And that's a good draw card in regard to bigger companies who are coming to the table. The old phrase, high tide rises all ships. Let's get it together, brother.
That's right. And if I go back to that first Woolies agreement that we had and what happened there, you've got a massive company in Australia doing business with a very small Indigenous company, and it's not in that tokenistic manner that's occurred for a very long time. You know, it's Reconciliation Week, we should do something with some Indigenous business now.
Brother, they're just doing business with you. You just happen to be black.
Yeah, that's right.
Your business organisation.
Adds so much more for them.
Exactly.
So, you know, and it's just, that was just, I can't speak highly enough of, we're always real quick to be negative.
Sure.
And you know, it has to be those parts. When the whip has to come out, it has to come out. But in this case, we've had nothing but tremendous support.
Beautiful.
From Woolies right through to all the government organisations, South 22, a whole bunch of other big companies that got involved with us, they have been incredible. And
Fields of Dream, brother, build it and they will come. Kevin Costner.
Absolutely. Build it, they'll come. And they are sitting at the table, and I feel for the first time in my short existence that people are actually listening to us.
Yes.
I've got to really pay my respects to all our ancestors, and particularly the ones over the last 100-odd years, and my grandparents, sort of generation, who, you know, they brought a brunt of colonisation in a different way when all the policies came about. But because of their fights and because of the fights of people out there, we're here now. And, like, is there anyone out there who's thinking about starting a business and it's a struggle? You know, 13 years ago, I didn't have a house to live in. I was living on the streets.
Yep, there you go.
And now I'm here. And it happens with a lot of support, but you've just also got to really trust in your cultural connection.
Exactly.
Get back to country and just... The ancestors are with you.
Look, it's good bridge builder as well. Good bridge builder for our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters as well. It being Reconciliation Week this week. Here's the tool, here's the vehicle, and it's bringing people together, my brother.
Absolutely it is. And it's bringing people together outside of Reconciliation Week so that when we reach Reconciliation Week, we're actually doing those real deep reconciliation conversations.
Hear, hear.
And I'm seeing more of that. And I appreciate... I appreciate the non-Indigenous person who stands up and goes, I actually want results in this area. We often talk internally in our business support groups around the concept of cash versus kindness and how a lot of organisations are willing to give us things for free and kindness and offer mentors and do stuff, but they're not actually willing to give us cash and invest in us. And that hasn't been the case for suppliers. People are investing. They're going, you're a good business, we're going to invest in you, we're going to support you. And that, to me, then means that when we hit Reconciliation Week and we have a hard conversation, it's built from a completely different point of view.
But it's a two-way street. I mean, they're receiving goods and services, but if not, they're investing in something that's coming back to them business-wise. So it's a win-win across the board, brother.
Absolutely. And it's just such a privilege to be part of. I love the fact that I'm getting to be on your radio show in the morning and be out there, heaps of deadly mob out there to be listening. And I can't believe we're here doing this, but at the same time I can, because we're here doing it, and there's lots of people out there who are, and lots of people who've come together and worked hard for us to be in this situation. And we've got to be grateful and humble of that, but at the same time,
that you are, brother.
We've got to grow.
Yep, got to grow.
There's a tidal wave of young Indigenous people coming. They are smart, they are switched on, I've got to be ahead of them. They're going to come take my job.
Yeah, there you go, brother. Step up. step up or step out. Brother, look, more power to you. Fantastic sharing with you. Thank you very much to our deadly listeners out there. Supply Oz. That's aus.com.au. Check it out. Support the brothers in business. And it's also about you at the table as well, and getting inspiration from the movement that you guys are doing. So thank you very much, my brother. All the best to you and your beautiful family, my brother. Stay safe, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. And we'll be yarning soon, Sean Andrews.
Thank you, Trevor, brother. I appreciate that.
Too deadly. One love, bro. A beautiful yarn there. That's Sean Andrews, chairperson of Supply Oz. So do check it out, your mob, supplyoz.com.au. Fantastic business, and they are kicking goals in more ways than one. Have your say, yarn up strong here on your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. That's the number you need to call. Yarn with the bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, you know, at BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. Too deadly.
My name's Raven and you're listening to Talk Black on BBM 98.7 FM.
I've been to New South Wales. I've been to Queensland. I've been to New South Wales. Makes no difference where I go. I get that old TI blues. I've been to Adelaide. I've been to Darwin too. Canberra doesn't thrill me, even Perth gives me the blues. I'm going back to TI, back to the place where I belong. And no dragon's gonna get me as long as I have you. You need the fancy clothes wherever you may go.
Yeah, Too Deadly under Cindy Drummond there, TI Blues here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Murray, going to sign off for you, Mobber. Thank you very much for your company. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow. That deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Your local mob, stay tuned. Trendy Trev taking you right through to 1 o'clock with the special COVID-19 program. So use that same number, 1-800-422-416. Your mob, look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe. The virus is still upon us, and there's no vaccine for it, so we need to just flatten out this curve by adhering to the rules that are in place, your mob. So do add to the conversation tomorrow, 1-800-422-416. Local mob, stick around. BBM 98.7 FM. Too deadly. Got the news coming up here with NIRS, National Digital Radio Service. A big shout out to the team there and their support and what they do for this fantastic program as well. Too deadly, mob, and looking at you when I talk to you. Too deadly.